Do you have questions about American root work?
Have you ever heard of mojo bags or conditioning oils and haven't a clue what they do? Or perhaps just felt a call to conjure?
Well, grab a lamp and strike a light and follow us to the crossroads. I'm Dr. Hobb, a journeyman Memphis conjure doctor.
And I'm Silver Shadow, a Chicago area Strega witch beginning his journey into root work.
Welcome to Lamplighter Blues, shining a light at the crossroads of American hoodoo, conjure, and root work.
Don't put that thing on me, 'cause I'm going back to Tennessee.
Good morning, friends. Welcome to episode 3 of the Lamplighter Blues. Today, we're going to be discussing Toby making. Toby's, for those of you who may or may not know, the quintessential mojo bags used in conjure and root work practice. We are very fortunate today to be joined by a special guest who will be discussing this from a position of extreme education. For which he has made many and employed them in a number of ways. We're joined today by Dr. E. Dr. E is a professional conjure doctor and Santeria priest. He's also a member of the prestigious Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. He is the proprietor of Dr. E Products, the makers of fine handmade hoodoo products and services, available online at conjuredoctor.com. He's also the founder of the Santeria Church of the Orishas, which can be found at santeriachurch.org. So without further ado, we will go into our interview with Dr. E.
Well, a Toby really is one regional name for an object that is commonly found in hoodoo and root work. Sometimes they're called Tobies. Sometimes they're called Jomos or Mojo bags. Sometimes they're called hands. Basically, they are a charm bag that's composed of various curios and items that are constructed for a magical purpose. And the person that they are constructed for carries that item on him in order to attract that particular influence. They can be made for luck or money or love, protection, any variety of purposes. But the thing that's unique about a mojo bag, which is what I like to call them, is that they center the focus of the magic on the individual, where like a candle spell or something is focused on an altar. Here, the person becomes the central receiver of whatever that magical purpose is, which is why they're really great when you want to attract something specifically to an individual. Mojo bags are typically constructed by a professional for another person, and they are each given a unique name that the owner of the bag can use in order to call upon for its assistance, because they really do act like little magical allies. Okay, they begin to take on a life of their own. And let's say your mojo bag is named Lucky Seven, okay, and it's a gambling luck mojo bag. You can actually carry that on you when you go gambling, and you can squeeze it and call it by its name and tell it, you know, let me hit this number, let me hit 17 on roulette, or, you know, let me roll a lucky seven, and you can call it by its name, lucky seven, lucky seven, let luck come to me, lucky seven, three times three, or something like that. And go ahead and gamble your game. And that little magical ally, that mojo bag, is working the energy in the background in order to attract that luck to you. So they're really a unique thing. I love making them. There's really an art to them.
Well, it's something to definitely bring up when you're talking about hoodoo specifically, because it's kind of the go-to thing. Every root worker out there has their method for doing it and, you know, has at least made one in their, you know, time at practice. So, as it is something of our show to kind of cover these things, it's kind of one of the, you know, bigger topics that we'll probably be coming back to.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, there's such a huge variety in even what they're constructed of. You know, people oftentimes go for the standard red flannel bag to make their mojo bag. That's my default. That's what I go. But there's some areas where people used yellow silk because it just happened to be what was available in their area. Or people would use leather. Some mojo bags are made with leather pouches, right? They're rare, but they do exist. There's even a theory as to why they use red flannel for most of the mojo bags. And I think the best theory I've heard so far is that most underwear at the time, long johns, were made people done with their underwear and they were kind of a little raggedy, they would repurpose the cloth in order to make magical objects that were tied that much more closely to that person. After all, those long johns were right up against your skin and absorbing all of your personal concerns while you wore them. So it makes sense to use that in order to construct a mojo bag. And that's what I use. Not long johns, but I do use flannel, green flannel. Those are basically the colors I stick to. Some folks have expanded their color options to include things like yellow and purple or brown or black. You know, that's just the natural modernization of hoodoo. But each person does have their own unique way, and mine tends to be very shamanic. It's how I think of it. I really firmly believe in calling upon the spirit of each of the components and the plants and the curios that go into the mojo bag to coax their energy out of them and help them align in their purpose so that that mojo bag really becomes an entity of its own. And that's something unique that I like to do.
On that idea, do you see it more as multiple entities, in this case, you know, the spirit of each mineral or herb working in concert, or that those come together to create a new spirit all by itself?
Yes, both. it's as a multitude of different things that you have to align in purpose. And then when you actually conjure the bag, once it's all put together and tied up and knotted with intention and purpose, then you actually conjure it into a life of its own. Part of that is you put your breath into it. Part of that is you sort of put the flame of life into it. And then it becomes its own unique individual. I mean, think of yourself, right? You have millions and billions of bacteria inside of your body. You have your own cells, and even there, the cells in your heart are different from the cells in your muscles, are different from the cells in your nerves. They're all sort of unique. And even inside of those cells, you have little mitochondria that are helping you process things. You are an amalgamation of various different lives that are all working together to keep your collective identity working, right? It's the same thing with a mojo bag. You have all of these individual unique things that contribute to the larger system so that the mojo bag becomes its own individual entity made out of a collective of different spirits.
Okay. See, I guess when I was always putting it together, it's like I get these components and I say, okay, you know, this spirit that now will be protected. This spirit will now be this, this, or this, based on what I put in to kind of align the energies, for lack of a better word, I guess, to create this new spirit. I never really thought about, after that spirit had been conjured, the other, spirits of the herbs and minerals that were there originally still being conscious,
right,
and still then performing.
Well, no, because every individual part has its own resonance, its own purpose involved in what you're doing. And even though you're building an overall whole that's sort of in line with this intent, it doesn't. Even though it becomes greater than the sum of its parts, the parts still have an effect.
Yeah, and I like that idea where, you know, the parts being representative of the different parts of that being, the, you know, this is the heart of it, this is the bones of it, as you had said on a previous recording that we unfortunately lost. But you know, that was something, actually, the first time I'd ever seen another worker put together a bag, which was Dr. Hobb in this case. He had used a piece of hijon as the heart of a bag, and that whole process was just incredibly intense. So I really like that concept.
Yeah, and I really do think of them as entities. I mean, you as a body have a skeleton, you have internal organs, you have a brain, you have skin, you know, you have all of these things. Well, so does a mojo bag. I mean, let me just throw like a sample mojo bag out there so we can use it in our discussions, okay? It's going to be a mojo bag. Let's say it's for gambling luck, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to throw in a silver dime. I'm going to throw in a piece of pyrite. I'm going to throw in a little bit of cinnamon chips. I'm going to throw in some five-finger grass. I'm going to throw in a alligator paw. Let's throw in a pair of lucky dice that had a good roll on them. And let's throw in some alfalfa so that we don't lose everything. Okay?
The alfalfa. Okay.
Protected. Each of these items have a unique quality to them, okay? That that alligator's paw and the five-finger grass both echo a similar quality of getting luck with anything your hand can grasp, okay? It's the idea of the hand attaining and grasping and grabbing that luck, okay? The nutmeg is harkens to a traditional charm that is rarely made because it's very toxic, but people used to take a nutmeg, drill a hole in it, and then fill it with mercury and carry that as a gambling charm, and then they would seal it with wax. But as we all know, mercury is very poisonous. But so you can recreate this by pairing a mercury dime, which has a similar sort of reference with the mercurial element of having luck with chance, the silver that's within the mercury dime, because they're made of silver, mm-hmm. Which is a very unique thing in our coinage. We don't have coinage that has silver anymore. And a nutmeg, which is also very good for money and luck. You put both of those into the mojo bag as sort of a substitution for that charm. You have pyrite, which has success and luck elements, especially in regards to money in it. You have all of these various different things. They each have unique qualities. And when you put them together, it makes a very whole and well-rounded mojo bag that not only draws luck to you, but helps you have luck with anything you manipulate in your hands. The lucky pair of dice gives you luck, especially so that in games where numbers are a part of it, the numbers will always roll in your favor, like those dice did. And then there's that element of alfalfa so that you don't lose your pants, so that, you know, you go, even if you do have a not-so-good day, you won't lose everything, because that's really part of the art of gambling, is like hedging your bets and doing all of that. The alfalfa does that. So you get this real excellent ally that's going to help you be a professional gambler instead of somebody that just walks up to a machine and drops a quarter in. You know, and it that's what works. And this, what's really unique about this is that this is a clearly African magical technology. Okay, this is straight out of Africa. Anyone who knows the Congolese systems of magic, which is where the magical technology root work comes from, it comes from the Congolese slaves that were brought to the southern United States. They make altars. They're not altars, they're shrines that are, you know, pots or carved wooden statues into which they put various things that have unique powers. You know, things like pieces of tree branch that those plants have been attributed powers to, dirt from various locations to collect the magic from that location and put it into this microcosm that you're creating that they would call an Nkisi. That technology is the same thing that we're using with a mojo bag. We're just using, you know, these pretty little items and putting them all together instead of, well, you could certainly put dirts in a mojo bag. Dirt from a bank would be great for a mojo bag for financial stability, you know? So it's just, it's the same technology that's there. It's just within a slightly different magical tradition that is enriched with Protestant Christianity, which is hoodoo, and the traditional religion of the Congolese people has been stripped away, but it's still magic. You know, when people are oppressed, they pull out the magic, and that's what happens. So the magic technology continued, and that's what we use in mojo bags.
Excellent. That's very in-depth discussion on that. Something that, you know, I imagine not too many people have really thought about when right. Putting these things together. I would like to touch on the taboos of the bags. It's something I know that you had said at some point, where if you make a mojo bag, you kind of give a card that has like the care instructions.
Right, exactly. Every mojo bag that I make comes with a paper that tells you how to care for that mojo bag. The things you want to keep in mind, it is traditional that you don't want anyone to handle your mojo bag. Only you can touch that. And that has a lot to do with something being sacred is kept secret. Okay, and the secrecy actually helps lend it a sacred nature. There's shared word stems between those two words for a reason, okay? So you keep it secret, nobody can touch it. If they touch your mojo bag, they will literally disempower it or steal your mojo, quote-unquote, okay? And so you want to make sure nobody touches it. If they touch it, that baby's dead. You might as well go back to the original conjure doctor that built it and have them recharge it in some way. I have made some exceptions to that rule. For example, I had a mother that her three-year-old child grabbed it because she had laid it on her bed while she was changing her clothes, and the child grabbed it. That's an innocent three-year-old child, okay? They don't mm-hmm. even know what that is. they can't even distinguish that from a spoon from the kitchen. You know what I mean? Where to grab it? Oh, no, not okay. That man has awareness. He has his own agenda and his own thoughts and issues. So that wouldn't be okay. Okay, so that's a pretty common rule. I extend my taboos to the point that I don't think anyone should see your mojo bag but you and the person who built it for you. Okay, that's it. If anyone else sees it, then again, that secret nature of the sacred object has been taken away and they know you have something, you're up to something. If anything, it may just pique their curiosity and then they're now focusing their thoughts and mental energy on your charm bag. And that's a bad thing. Okay. So what I tell people is if anyone has seen your mojo bag, you should at least redress it with some oil or whatever you're feeding it with. If you're feeding it with Hoyt's cologne or with whiskey, just refeed it and pray over it in order to give it a little boost so that it's not completely drained. It's not the end of, you know, end of the world, but it does sap the energy a little bit. There's also a discussion on dropping of the mojo bag. Some people think it's a really bad thing if you drop your mojo bag, almost like the tradition where women will not put their purse on the floor because that represents their money hitting the ground and losing of prosperity. The same thing with the mojo bag. I don't necessarily ascribe to that myself because I know that the original charms and fetishes from Africa that mojos were modeled after live on the ground. So I don't have a problem with that. So I'm like, if it falls on the ground, just say, I'm sorry, dust it off and put it in your pocket. All right. But some people would go so far as to say that it needs to be recharged all over again and have that original root worker that built it re-bless it and bring it back to life again. I think nobody should know the name of your mojo bag but you and the person who built it. Don't go walking around saying, you know, oh, Miss Madame is my key to getting men, and Miss Madame this, that, and the other, and Miss Madame happens to be the name of your mojo bag. That's bad. Nobody should know that but you. That is your unique thing. To know the name of something is to have power over it. So you don't want anyone to know the name of your mojo bag. Let me see, what else? I think that's pretty much it. I tell people for the first week they should carry them against their skin so that that mojo bag really becomes accustomed to their energy and really ties into them. You want to make sure that it doesn't get wet. That's another one. You don't want to sleep with it or sweat with it because then it gets ruined. You don't want to launder it. I've had people launder them. I've had people that keep their mojo bag in their underwear, and then when they go to the bathroom, it falls right into the urinal.
Oh, man. That's bad.
One of my exes, I made a get a job mojo bag, and that very thing happened. And I'm like, well, your job just went down the toilet, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, thinking on that, too, there's, you know, an aspect to urine in hoodoo. You have this domination. And so assuming that you and someone else went to get a job and that person used that before that, you can bet if they interviewed for that job, they are going to stomp you into the ground now.
Right. Your job away. That's the idea.
All right, so we kind of talked a little bit about the taboos. That's something that comes to me a lot because I'll finally get my Toby ready, go, okay, here it is, and I'll take that client aside and I'll give them detailed instructions. And, like, without a doubt, the person will then immediately go to their friend and go, look what I've got.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just like, I just told you that. Why would you do that?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the appeal of the exotic, you know, people.
And
it's just stop it. Just put it away, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, well, like what you said about keeping it out of sight. I mean, I tell clients I build them for, don't even talk about the fact that you have anything going.
Right.
You know, don't tell people you have any kind of help, any kind of thing working, because you never know when you're going to hit something like an evil eye response.
Right.
Just that sort of negativity or jealousy that could kill that bag.
Yeah. And it, you know. I get it's the pretty new shiny and everything, but
One of the most powerful spiritual lessons or magical lessons you can ever have is the importance of secrecy. And if you really learn how to just shut your trap, you will have so much more success with your magical work. I mean, even to the point of if you're like this, I just moved into a new apartment. I didn't tell anybody about the new apartment until the lease was signed. Like, literally. And then everyone's like, oh, my God, you're moving? I had no idea. Again, it's the power of keeping things secret makes them sacred and makes them build in power until they explode into manifestation.
Right. And that's actually something for me that I need to keep in check. Because as I've discovered, at least, as soon as I say, you know, so-and-so agreed to be on the show, and I need to not say that until we've recorded, because otherwise I will never catch that person.
That's true. That's very true. That's true. But one of the things I wanted to touch on also was the way that I build my mojo bags. I talked about this earlier, where I like to think of it as an entity that has bones and muscles and, you know, a heart and things like this. The way I build it is I build from the heaviest to the lightest. Okay. And I try to put the heaviest things to the bottom, things like big mineral chunks or very large seeds like a buckeye or a nutmeg. All those things go at the bottom. And I think of that as sort of the skeleton of the mojo bag. It's the bones. Okay. It's what gives it substance. I always try to have something like that in there. Otherwise it's just an herb bag. You know, I want to have something meaty at the bottom of that. After I add in those big things like the chunks of metal or, you know, pyrite, things like that, then I will move into roots. And I will put in roots for whatever purpose, because roots have that incredible, almost like a battery of energy for the plant. They have the battery of energy for us to call upon. We're root workers, after all. We use roots for what we do. And I think of the roots as sort of the muscles of the mojo bag. They do the heavy lifting. They do the hard work. So I try to include at least anywhere from 1 to 3 roots in each mojo bag. After that, I'll put in leafy things, dried leaves like dried peppermint or deer's tongue or things for various purposes. And I think of those almost like the systems, the regulating systems in the body, maybe like the endocrine glands or the things that help the body stay healthy and move about. Because again, the green leaves have that vitality within them. And the last thing that I put in are dried flowers, things like rose petals or lavender or calendula petals. This is the last thing that I put in. And I oftentimes think of that almost like the kind of like the appearance of the mojo bag, the beauty of the mojo bag. You know, it's the last thing that I put in. And then the very, very, very last item that goes in before I close the bag is that person's prepared photograph made into a name paper. That is the brain of the mojo bag. That tells the mojo bag, here's your instruction set. You are going to do this for me. Okay. And this is your job and you will stay on task. And once I slip that in, right now I've put all the components in, and then it's just a matter of putting breath into it to breathe it to life, and then tying it off and knotting it with intentions to seal the systems of the body. So it really is like constructing a little life. It's constructing a little entity. I wrap that up by sort of like kickstarting the life, almost like when a person is dead and you need to shock them to life. You know, you get the paddles and you put them on their chest and bzzz. That's where I actually hold the mojo bag by its string, and I suspend it either over incense smoke or a flame, and I enchant it. And I talk its purpose, and I repeat it with growing intensity, almost like a Baptist preacher, just more and more and more about what it's going to do. Money comes to me, money stays with me, money comes to me, money stays with me, and repeat it over and over. And the bag will start spinning around the smoke or the flame. And I hold it there and keep chanting until it naturally stops and has absorbed all of that energy. Now it is alive. Now it has a purpose and it's ready to go. That's how I construct my mojo bags.
Wow. That's all right. Pretty good detail explanation. Anything you would like to add to that, Dr. Helm?
No, just to say that I think methodology does seem to evolve from practitioner to practitioner, because there's some similarities with my method with, of course, what Dr. East described. As far as I also call on, you know, you call on the individual aspects of the ingredients to kind of get them working towards your ultimate purpose. One thing I do, like you're talking about, as far as the having structure in it, mine's not necessarily the same as yours, of course, but I do like to have one item in a bag that I think of as the heart of the bag. And I've used things like you talked about, like things like Hyjon or Queen Elizabeth root. I've used bottle caps. I've used pieces of lightning struck wood, things like that. Mm-hmm. I like to have at least one central item that the bag is built around that, for me, when I quicken that bag, when I bring that spirit to life, that's its heart, and that's sort of the center of it. And the rest of it is built to support and reinforce and grow on that, from that heart.
See, and I don't think when I've made bags that I've ever decided this is the centralized thing. It's as I'm putting it together, I'm kind of envisioning the entity that it will become. Mm-hmm. And no part of it seems greater than the whole as it's put together.
Yeah, I think it's just an aspect of looking at a cross-section of workers.
Right. It's kind of neat to do that,
right, though. You look at three different workers who are doing the same task, ultimately, in the way they're done. And that's sort of interesting part of the tradition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Another great little trick, too, because you've got all these different items, to get them to work together in unison is to pick a condition oil, pick a hoodoo oil, and use that to dress each item before you put it into the bag. So if it's a money draw bag, use money draw oil, and you're going to dress every little item you put in there. You put that nutmeg in there, you're going to dress it with oil first and then drop it in. If you're going to put in a silver dime, you're going to dress it with oil first and then put it in. And that way, you know, you sort of pull everything together because they're all wearing the same outfit. Do you know what I mean? You
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, and then that gives all of the pieces a solidified purpose on top of being able to add whatever extra quality that root or mineral is designed for.
Right.
Or, I guess, was given to us for.
Right. And then you get into discussions of, you know, do you use a conjure oil, or do you use a perfume, or do you use whiskey? You know, there's lots of different things that you can use to feed the bag. And it's traditional to feed the bag once a week on the same day, and preferably related to the purpose of what your bag is. I just tell people pick a day and stick to it. You know, that's all that really is. But, you know, originally root doctors would use perfumes because oils weren't traditionally used. It was perfumes. You had things like Hoyt's cologne, you know, and that's what folks would use, or whiskey. And when Prohibition struck in the early 1900s, alcohol was outlawed. And so a lot of conjure doctors had to evolve their practice and make oil-based scents instead of alcohol-based scents. And that's where the tradition of conjure oils really took off. And that's what we use now. But, you know, if you've ever owned a mojo bag, putting oil on that every single week, it starts to get kind of crunchy, you know, after a while.
Yeah.
You might want to try making an alcohol-based version of your conjure oil and use that to, you know, sort of five-spot your bag once a week to keep it strong. You know, that certainly would work as well.
And that comes back to just caring for it. You've said a few times you've referred to a mojo as a little spiritual helper.
Yeah.
And like any other ally, any other assistant like that, it needs to be cared for, you know, talking to it, feeding it, treating it, you know, with respect.
Exactly. And, you know, when I hear people say something like, oh, that reconciliation mojo bag that you made, I lost it. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. If you have such little regard for the mojo bag, what is that saying about the ex you're trying to get back? Like,
right.
You might as well have just said, I lost my ex. It's the same kind of thing. So
yeah.
maybe there's a reason you need a reconciliation mojo bag. But yeah, you definitely have to treat this like your most prized possession. It's a shrine. You really have to take care of it.
Well, discussing the idea of the respect we show for them, how about a bag that's become badly worn, or a bag that has served its purpose?
Yeah, well, if it's served its purpose and you no longer need its, like, let's say you had a reconciliation mojo bag and you just decided, this guy's not worth my time anymore, I'm not going to bother, I'm going to go ahead and just let this whole situation go. Many people will just say, take the whole mojo bag and toss it into a fire and be done with it, or throw it into a river that runs out of town and be done with it. What I prefer to do, because I put so much love into my mojo bags, is I like to actually snip them open. And I will take the name paper out, and I will ritually burn that so that the brain is basically turned off, and now the magical purpose is defunct. And then I take all the items, and I like to return them to nature. I will put them in the ground or something so that they can disintegrate, or I'll throw them into a moving river so that they can flow out of town and flow out of your life. And then the flannel bag itself, I just throw that away. You could burn it, but I just throw that away. I don't want to pollute or, you know, litter. But that's how I like to dismantle my mojo bags that are no longer useful. But if you want to keep that mojo bag's energy going and it just looks really raggedy and you need to kind of freshen it, you should refresh your mojo bags once a year. And some people like to do this at the around the autumn equinox, which is typically when I do them, just because it's harvest time. Original mojo bag back to your worker and have them refresh it, because it'll get a new bag, so it'll be clean, and they will reutilize the major contents inside of the bag, so that aforementioned High John the Conqueror root will be reused, that silver dime will be reused, that the devil's shoestrings will be reused, and then the leafy, fluffy stuff, that will get refreshed refreshed with new leafy, fluffy stuff so that it'll be fresh. It'll have new energy. It'll be revitalized. But all the bones and the heart of it are still in there. And that original name paper is also put in the refreshed mojo bag, carrying the brain from one to the next. That's how I like to do it. I sometimes will even take the little, the pursed mouth of the bag where it's been tied off and all those knots are. Sometimes I'll actually take that and put that in the new bag because there's purpose in those knots. You know, that's sort of like tying the spell shut. Sometimes I will put that in the newly refreshed bag.
And that makes sense. I mean, as you said, it's partially because you had invested time and energy into putting those knots, and also that it's a secondary representation of what it was, even in its new form. It still has that, you know, kick from the original creation.
Right, right. I have a friend who is very schooled in Appalachian folk magic, and they make mojo bags there as well. They call them hands. And he says that, you know, when you tie off a hand and you look at it, it looks like a little pursed mouth. You know, it looks like a little mouth. So people will hold their mojo bags in their hand and just look at the mouth, and they will sort of talk to their mojo bag and look at the mouth and listen to any responses they get, basically. Like if it's a lottery luck mojo bag, they're talking to it, they will talk to the bag and say, give me the numbers that are going to hit. And they'll look at the mouth and wait for the inspiration to hit them, and suddenly they'll start getting numbers, and they'll play those numbers in the lottery. So taking that symbolic mouth and transferring it to the next refreshed mojo bag makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I did want to touch on, too, is the use of mojo bags outside of a personal, or like one that you would actually have on your person.
Right.
You had spoken briefly before about having them behind your door. Is there any other places you can think that you would have these?
Oh, absolutely. Mojo bags for a place instead of a person are great. Behind a door is great for either protection or drawing goodness into the house. But you can make a mojo bag to put in a cash register of a business, for example, to draw money, to draw clients. Or if you're a writer, you can create a mojo bag that you keep in a little box next to your computer. So when you go to write, that inspiration and the creativity flows from that mojo bag to you. You could even do a law keep away mojo bag and put it under the seat of your car to keep you out of sight from those patrol officers that are out there trying to ticket speeders, for example. I'm not going to make that mojo bag for you, but you could. It could be made. Yeah, that's one of the, I really can't make stuff to avoid the law. That's something that I have that I don't succeed in. So another root worker is going to have to do that for you. But let's say, for example, that you run a business and you just want to attract more customers. You can also take a mojo bag and hide it in a plant, in a potted plant by the entrance of your business to draw people into your business. So there's lots of different ways that they can be used. You just want to continue to respect them and feed them on a regular basis to keep their influence strong.
And that was something that I was keep going back to when we talk about taboos, of not having them be seen and not having them be handled and things, is to find a placement that's predominant enough. Because normally if you have it in like a store or something, you put it so people walk under it.
Right.
But, you know, what I've always ended up doing, if I can, is if they're going to walk under it, then I put it above the drop ceiling or something where they still have that effect with it, but nobody can see it, nobody can touch it. It's gone, and it's secret as far as anyone's concerned.
Right, hide it. Hide it behind a painting, hide it in a potted plant, hide it in a little pretty vase or something like that. I mean, these are all great ways that you can do it. Or, I mean, you could even conceivably take that mojo bag, put it in a glass jar, and bury it in the ground under the doorstep to your business so people walk over it. That would work, too.
Oh, yeah, that's another good one.
Playing off of that whole foot track magic, that would work too. Lift up the floorboards and put it under the floorboards. You could do that. There's lots of different ways you can disguise things and hide them. You know, it's even better if you hide it behind a really pretty art object so that people focus on the art object and don't even know there's a charm behind it.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
Lastly, there was something else I was considering bringing up, and we'll see how much people are interested in speaking about it before we run into our secondhand hoodoo segment. But that's the concept of trick Tobies.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I can't remember when I had heard an individual talking about it, how they had ordered two. One was for Bane, one was for Boon. They had switched the labels and then given the bad one to a person that was causing them a great deal of trouble with the, you know, the sticker that said, oh, this is a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could construct a breakup mojo bag and give it to your quote unquote, you know, frenemy who's having relationship difficulties and tell her, hey, just to help you because I know you're going through a really tough time. A friend of mine said it's a really good charm to help relationships to be fixed. Or you can just make one and hide it under their bed when you go and visit their house. Put it between the mattresses or something, you know? That's a good idea, too. You can also take a mojo bag like that and hide it inside of an object that you give as a gift to somebody. So, for example, let's say that you have a neighbor that is very, very, very noisy. Okay, they're very noisy. And you know that the biggest part of the problem with the noise are the children that they have. Well, you could get a doll for their child and pop the head off and stick a mojo bag inside of it for things like, you know, move away, get out of here, go away kind of hot foot stuff. And put it inside of that doll and pop the head back onto the doll and give it to them. Oh, look, I found this beautiful doll. I thought your daughter might like it. Oh, thank you so very much. That little kid's going to drag that doll all over the house. And the influence of the hot foot is going to be present inside of that house, and it will work until they leave.
Wow. That is epic.
Yeah, I mean, you can get really creative. I mean, please, you think working with trick mojo bags is, or trick Tobies is a problem. You wait till you get me talking about powders, then I bring it down.
Yeah, and anybody who wants to hear that, there's a holiday episode of the Lucky Mojo radio show. Which, as far as I'm concerned, should be titled The Dr. E Trick Everyone Who You've Ever Met episode.
Well, so, it works.
Yeah, it does. And actually, after you had said that, I had gone to my shop and created what I called Respect My Home oil, which is basically sit down, enjoy yourselves, but shut the hell up.
Right. Exactly. Shut up and eat oil. Yeah.
But, you know, it's eloquent. Respect my home.
Yes, exactly. That's great. That's perfect. But, yeah, you can do that. That's very common. You could even make really teeny tiny mojo bags and hide them inside of jewelry that you give to people and give it to them as a gift, and they have no idea that they're, you know, carrying things. So, or you can even sew them inside the lining of a jacket or something like that. You just have to make them really small so that people can't tell they're there and then gift that person that item of clothing.
And the beautiful thing about the jacket is they won't wash it.
Exactly.
Although I don't know what's your opinion on a jacket that perhaps has been dry cleaned? I don't even know how they do that.
I would consider that ruined, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, well, is there anything else you wanted to comment on before we got to the secondhand hoodoo?
I think people try to complicate the construction of mojo bags too much. And they fall into what I call the Virgo quandary, which is you want to make it absolutely perfectly, and since you can't make it perfectly the first time, you just don't make it. Well, to that I tell people, experiment, play, try it out, give it a shot, and see what results you get. And you'll probably fall in love with making mojos just as much as I have. And it's not one of those things where you're going to botch it and the universe is going to implode. You know, give it a try and experiment and see what you like. And I think you'll discover some really unique ways of your own to construct mojo bags.
Absolutely. And all else fails, it just won't work.
Yeah, that's, exactly. Yeah.
That's at least my experience. Dr. Hobb, anything?
No, I think Dr. E's pretty well covered it.
I think so as well. All right, well, let's take a little break here, and then we will jump into secondhand hoodoo.
Perfect.
Hello, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane.
And we're the hosts of New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft.
If you're looking for a show about magic, specifically North American folk magic, then come check us out.
Some of the subjects we'll be covering are hoodoo and root work, powwow, New Orleans-style voodoo, Appalachian granny magic, Ozark mountain magic, brujeria and corinderismo, and New England witchery.
In addition, we'll be having discussions about things like effective spellcrafting successes and failures, magic for oneself and magic for others, magical terminology, hexing, and being in or out of the broom closet.
If that sounds like the show for you, come find us at newworldwitchery.wordpress.com or find us on iTunes.
Thanks for listening.
And be well.
All right, so today our item is one that I found again when I was down south of the treasure trove. And it is a hand-sized mink trap. So this particular object, it looks like a snare, but it's the snare itself is the size of your palm, and it's made specifically for, you know, retrieving pelt. And I thought, you know, as soon as I saw it, I could think of at least a dozen things to do with it. But in this case, we will turn this over to Dr. E to see what he can come up with.
Well, the cool thing about, the little mink trap and any kind of trap or snare is they're very good for spells when you want to catch someone, much like, you know, hunting prey and catching them. So what I would probably do is use this in a spell, for example, to catch someone who has stolen my property, okay, and have them fall into the hands of the law, get them caught, get them in trouble. I would probably use a figural candle to represent the individual that is the thief. In this case, I'd probably use a black devil candle, since I don't know if it was male or female, and I would carve the thief into the candle, and on the flip side of the candle, I would carve, "You are caught red-handed." And I would actually dress that candle with crossing oil. Perhaps may even dress it with something like an oil that has been saturated with devil's shoestring or something to trip up the devil to catch him. I would then powder that candle with some crossing powder, and I would put it in the center of my altar with the trap around it. Like it's like a loop, right? Almost like a little lasso.
No, in this case it's think of like the standard bear trap. It's got two fang parts that snap together.
Perfect. I would open up the trap and I would actually grease the trap with justice oil. Okay.
Oh, that's good.
And I would set it down and I would put the figural candle in the middle of it, and I would light the candle and I would begin to curse the hell out of this candle and out of my the thief who had stolen from me. I would probably pray some psalms. I would use something like a Psalm 91 or a Psalm 109, something that's really Psalm 109 would be better, a very imprecatory psalm that's really heavy-handed. And right when I reach the end of the psalm, I would very carefully, using a stick or something like that, trigger the trap to snap shut. And if the trap is just the size that I'm thinking, it'll probably snap shut with such intensity that it may actually decapitate the candle.
It probably would. It's when I was messing with it, it had some serious spring power.
Right, right. So again, you get the whole thing, you know, and may you be cut. And I pray this in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. Snap. And I would snap that thing shut to catch him and have him be fully punished by the law. I would then take all of these items, I would wrap them up, and I would deposit them respectfully in a trash can inside of a police precinct or at the front doorstep of a jail in order to literally deliver the thief to the jail. Now, that's one use that you could use for it. Another great use that I could think of for the trap is if somebody has sent a spirit at me, okay, and I'm being plagued by this spirit and I'm being driven crazy by this spirit, what I would actually do is create a bottle of some kind, like a trap bottle, and into the bottle I would put things that would snare and catch the spirit. Things like Spanish moss, which has that tangly sort of quality to it, 9 nails, 9 pins, broken glass, things that will snag and snare that spirit. I would then fill the bottle with rum as an offering to that spirit. And then maybe even a little bit of perfume, like a Florida water, Pompeian cologne, something like that, that has that attractive fragrance to call the spirits in. I would then place the bottle next to the trap, not in the middle of the trap, but I would actually open up and spring load the trap and have it ready to go. And I would place a small sensor with a charcoal burning in the center of the trap. And on that lit charcoal, I would burn things like mullein leaves and a little bit of myrrh and perhaps a little bit of just a tiniest pinch of black pepper or something like that. The idea is you're calling and summoning that negative spirit to come, the one that's on you, to manifest in that smoke and have it come and be present, right? And
okay.
I would sit there and call to it, maybe even sing to it, command it to be present. And I would make sure the smoke is going nice and strong. And what you do is you take a lit candle, like a lit white candle or black candle, whatever. You light it, and when you bring it close to the mouth of the bottle, at some point, all of the perfume and the rum and all of that that's evaporating is flammable. So when you bring the candle close to the tip of the bottle, it'll actually ignite and suck the spirit down into it. Okay, so I would actually do that. And the minute it does that, it makes a hooting sound. It goes whoop. It actually like sucks the spirit down into the bottle. And I would actually snap the trap at the same time. So it's like I'm cutting your existence in the smoke that I'm manifesting, and I'm sucking you into the bottle and trapping you. And I'd actually cork the bottle with the very candle I used to ignite the vapors that were coming off of it. I'd then wrap that up in black cloth, and I would take it to a cemetery and bury it in the ground so that that spirit can be laid to rest and no longer come after me. Because that trap is made of iron, and iron has that ability to sever energy and cut that spirit away from me and trap it into the bottle. So that's another idea how I'd use it.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. When I had first seen it, that was what I was kind of thinking too, was the concept of it being made of iron and that it would be able to really grab a hold of something that you perhaps want to get rid of. Hey. But, all right, Dr. Hobb.
Yeah, the spirit trap was actually my first thought, but thankfully I came up with a backup. what I'm thinking of is, you said it's a mink trap, right?
Yeah.
For me, minks are in the weasel family, in this kind of nefarious sort of thing, plus combined with the sort of vanity and greed that we kind of associate with mink occasionally, you know, you think of it. For me, I think I would, one other use for it would be in a cast-off evil use.
Really?
If you were going to use it to remove someone from a negative influence or something, a person or a substance abuse or a situation, I think you could put together a moving candle spell. You put your candle together to represent, load your candle to represent your person, your client you're trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
Dress it with something like healing oil or cast off evil, and take some symbol, whether it's a picture, a petition paper, some symbol of whatever it is you're trying to rescue them from, and snap it into the trap.
Okay.
And slowly, as you move that candle away from it over time, to sort of distance them from it, but you're using that trap as a device to bind and hold whatever this addiction or whatever this compulsion is, to keep it stable and away from them, to keep it static and away from them.
Mm-hmm. See, and I never would have gone there with an idea of using it as like a cast-off avarice type of idea.
Almost anything can be turned towards a positive use, or can be used either way, I think.
Right.
And I think in this case, instead of using it, you're using it to trap something you just want to keep away from someone and give it as a...
Right.
So that was the other thought I had.
All right. And the other thing that I was thinking of, too, is I've seen candles that were the large green dollar signs.
Yes.
And, you know, again, since the first thing you jump to is immediately this thing catches something and it really holds on to it. So you could do something like, you know, money stay with me, money come to me, money attraction type of thing. And, you know, you could have a candle that's representing yourself. And these traps in general have a stake down chain that normally, you know, you tie it up so the thing can't get away with your trap too. That you could kind of attach that chain to you. And as you're moving that candle in, eventually it gets close enough to you that you could snap it in the trap and go, okay, now it's mine. Now it can't get away. So.
That's I like that.
Yeah. That's
good. I was also thinking you could use it in a spell to stop, or rather, I guess, someone caught in their own lies. And
yeah.
This is where you could actually use like a beef tongue and cut it open. And inside of that, put in the person's name, photos, maybe even some of their hair or something like that. And I would dress it with a stop gossip oil, and I would sprinkle it with crushed alum with some agrimony to reverse their negative words back at them, and perhaps some sulfur to curse their words. And I would actually tie it all up in black thread, and I would wag the tongue as I was talking about my claim and say, all the lies that you've said, all of the false things that you've spread, the rumors, the negativity, all the things that you've done to try to get me in trouble, may it all come back to bite you. Bite your tongue. May your own lies be what catches you in your own trap, and use the tongue to slap on that trap so it snaps shut.
Oh, man.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
The intention that the person actually will end up like wounding themselves, biting their tongue from all the lies that they've told. And then I would take that whole thing and I'd throw that in the river and let it flow out of my life and out of town once and for all. So that's a great way you could use it too.
Yeah. Wow. See, now I wish I would have bought the thing. It was like $30.
Yeah, I kind of want one now.
Wonderful to use, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, you know, the sound that thing makes when it snaps shut is unmistakable.
That was a good one. I feel, I like that one.
I thought you would. Yeah. So, all right, well, it sounds like that will bring us to the end of this show. So I want to thank Dr. E for coming on and sharing all of his knowledge on Tobies and giving us the beautiful stop gossip spell that it's just picturesque.
Well, thank you for having me on, guys. This was a real treat, and I'd love to be on anytime in the future if you want.
Sure. Well, excellent.
Well, again, Dr. E, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to the Lamplighter Blues. Our show can be found at iTunes and lamplighterblues.wordpress.com.
You can also reach us via Twitter at LamplighterBlue, that's with no S, or at LamplighterBlues@gmail.com. Until next time.
Don't put that thing on me. Don't put that thing on me, 'cause I'm going back to Tennessee.